Thank you and good morning. We have a visitor in the studio this morning who's very far away from home, and home means Hooper Bay to our visitor, Father Paul O'Connor, who has been an Alaskan missionary for 18 years. Now, before returning home to Hooper Bay, we thought it might be possible to persuade Father O'Connor to leave us with a little knowledge about life on the shores of the Bering Sea. Now, I know that many of our listeners have read your book, Eskimo Parish, Father, but I'm sure that that will only make them more anxious to hear your story from your own mouth. And we know, of course, that you haven't spent all of your 18 Alaskan years just at Hooper Bay, so perhaps we might start off this morning with asking you just what your first experiences in the Arctic were.
I came up to Alaska in 1930, spent a few years at Holy Cross, and then I went further down the Yukon to Mountain Village, and then slipped down to Akularak, where I spent about, between 4 and 8 years, and covered at that time sometimes as high as 1,500 miles on the trail. And later on, I went up to Kotzebue, and there my mode of travel changed from all the way from dog team to whale boat, and also planes, and we covered practically the whole Arctic during that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you find is the ratio of difference between travel by airplane and dog team?
About 1 to 100, maybe.
Well, Father, you mentioned the 1,500 miles. Just how long a period of time do you take to travel 1,500 miles by dog team?
Well, to travel, that'll be about 1,500 miles would be about 2-3 week trips.
Mm-hmm.
They take from Holy Cross to the Kuskokwim. I'd leave Holy Cross and spend sometimes as high as the 21 days on the trail. And during that time, I'd cover sometimes, between 600 and 800 miles.
Mm-hmm. Well, just how many villages does that encompass?
Well, that would take in about all the way from 8 to 12 villages in one trip.
And do you visit, that's on one trip. Now, how many villages do you estimate you visit every year, Father O'Connor?
Well, that varies a great deal. In the Arctic, I'd try to visit at least all the villages up there above the circle. It's once a year. And down in a place like around Akularak, where the villages are very small, I would average 3 trips, say, a winter. And during those trips, from 10 to 15 small tundra villages each trip.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that you're the only white man that these people see at all. Isn't that true?
In some places, at Hooper Bay, for example, for the past summer, I was the only white man there. Mm-hmm. And during the winter, the teachers and I are about the only ones that are around.
Mm-hmm. How many teachers do you have there?
We have 2 teachers now at Hooper Bay.
Well, of course, you know, it's generally customary to ask a missionary just what he thinks of the Eskimos, but perhaps we ought to turn the tables this time and find out just what the Eskimos think of the white man. I'm sure you've had enough experience, and you know their opinions by now.
An Eskimo, he does think, and he often wonders why a white man who has so much, why he's so discontented, whereas an Eskimo who has so little, he's very happy. And he often wonders why the white man is so much in a hurry, and also why a white man tries to, instead of waiting for the weather, tries to overcome the weather.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the Eskimo just takes it as it comes.
The Eskimo takes it as it comes and generally takes it with a smile.
Mm-hmm. And he isn't generally caught out at 50 or 60 below the way we are. Isn't that true?
No, an Eskimo very seldom is caught on the trail, and when he does, why, he's well provided.
Mm-hmm. Which brings to mind, Father O'Connor, I wanted to ask you, have you ever had any adventures on the trail? Have you ever had to sleep out at any time?
Well, I've slept out several times, but one time, through my own negligence, and through my leader was, his paw was broken by one of his pups, and I was forced to use a small dog on the trail, or as a leader, and I was lost for 3 days in a blizzard, and during that time I slept out each night without any food, and at the end of that time, I was a pretty weary musher.
I imagine you were. And how far did you have to go before you finally got to a village?
It wasn't so far, but I found out later that I'd been wandering out on the Bering Sea and was off the beaten trail. And it was only on the third day that the sun came out and I was able to see some landmarks. And then I fell in an overflow and finally staggered in the village with just about half frozen, but we thawed out in no time at all.
Well, good for you. Were you all alone on this particular trip, Father?
No, I had an Eskimo boy with me, but he was, after the second day, he was pretty weak, and we carried him along and But he recovered quicker than I did when we finally arrived.
Mm-hmm. I imagine the dogs were in pretty bad shape, too, weren't they?
Well, that was one time when I was glad that I had a good team. The dogs in the whole time didn't eat once, and they kept it going all the time.
How many dogs do you usually have on it?
I usually take about 11 dogs on a big trip like that. But if I go off alone, why, 7 or 9 are enough.
Mm-hmm. Father, since a good many of our listeners this morning, I know, are women who are certainly interested in what type of family life exists on the shores of the Bering Sea and in the far north in the Arctic, perhaps your familiarity with Eskimo life you could help us out. Give us just a few ideas of how Eskimo women keep house, just the type of food they eat and what their daily routine is.
First of all, to speak about the... an Eskimo woman generally has about from 4 to 8 children, and the children are an unending task, and especially to keep a child well shod. In fact, I can generally tell a good mother the way her children are shod. If the children have nice mukluks and are well, they're clothed with their furs, why, generally the mother is a pretty busy woman. Now, it is no small task to keep 6 or 7 youngsters in good mukluks. And also in good furs. The mother has to tan the furs. In fact, I think practically all of her time is spent on taking care of her children. The babies are demand a great deal of attention. And food, for the most part, the cooking of it, that's left to the younger women, or the younger girls of the family, and it's mostly boiled. And take, for example, salmon is boiled, and the only thing that's fried is the... is the bread, which their bread, for the most part, is sort of a big waffle. They boil it in fry it in seal oil, and it bubbles up and becomes a big pancake or waffle, and it's quite delicious.
Mm-hmm. Where do they get their dough?
The dough, they buy their flour from the store,
mm-hmm.
and they stack up with 3 or 4 gunnies of flour at the beginning of winter. Well, and use it accordingly.
Well, is that a white man's innovation, then, the dough? It wasn't a part of their diet then originally,
no,
was it?
No, before they lived almost exclusively on meat and berries and fish and birds and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't seem to suffer any lack of vitamins by doing so.
Do you eat the Eskimo diet at all, Father?
I'll eat the Eskimo diet on the trail, but I often find my boy will slice off a piece of dried whale and chew it and down it, and I can take the same whale and use all my molars on it, but I never can get through it.
Well, then you have to stock a lot of provisions then.
When I go out for a trip, I stock up with the native diet, say the stripped salmon, and also we'll snag a couple of ptarmigans on the trail.
Mm-hmm, they're good.
And. Then we'll have a box of hardtack and so on, and also some frozen bread, and at times we thaw it out. But for canned foods, I take sometimes some canned beans, but that's about all.
Mm-hmm. And when you're home, though, at the mission?
At the mission, where I lived like anybody does.
Mm-hmm.
I live well.
Father, I'm sure that you probably have an opportunity to play Santa Claus at Christmas time to the children in the area, and I thought perhaps you might mention a few things about your experiences with Eskimo children who are noted for their charm and personality.
Well, I remember one occasion where about beyond the Kuselvak Mountains, there was a little girl, and it took me about 3 years to become acquainted with her. She was only about 12 at the time when I began to know her. So I finally invited her to the mission for Christmas and I told her that if she'd come, I would give her a big doll. Well, Christmas came along, the little girl came, and I was overcome by the rush of events. We had about 70 teams of the mission and many cumbersome duties, and I forgot all about the little rascal. And finally, the day after Christmas, she was about to leave, and she came up to say goodbye, and her mother says, "Father, how about the doll?" Well, my heart skipped a beat, and I thought for a moment that I'd given all my dolls away. And then I rushed up to my attic, and luckily there was a big rag doll about 3 feet high, a beauty. And I came down with this doll and gave it to this little girl. And when she received that doll, her eyes were actually as big as saucers. And I knew right then that I was that youngster's friend for life.
Well, that was a good Christmas for you.
In fact, I don't think I've ever had as much pleasure as giving dolls to little girls and some little mechanical toy to a boy.
I imagine the little boys get a big thrill out of mechanical toys.
Yes, some of these youngsters, just recently we had a party here at Hooper Bay, and I give a little car to a little boy. I think it was the first present he ever received. And later on in the afternoon, I happened to run over to his house to hear the confession of his bedridden mother. And he had this little lad had that little car on the table and was running it around, and he was just as happy as can be. And when I filled the sidecar, the car with a couple of peanuts, why, he looked up also, and he was happier still.
Well, Father O'Connor, I hope that you won't forget to include some of these very charming stories in your forthcoming book. I understand that you do plan to write another book about your Eskimo parish, another book on the same order about your life in the Arctic.
We'll try to do that. I have about 13 or 14 chapters already finished, and this next book, why, we'll try to illustrate a little more profusely than the former one.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you mean by illustrate, do you mean pictures?
Pictures of the, especially pictures of the Alaska Eskimo children.
Mm-hmm. Are there any Eskimo artists in that area who could possibly help you out?
Not at Hooper Bay. We have some, they do some clever basket work down in that section. But as far as artistry goes and pictures, why, they're not so strong for that. Although the children are constantly occupied and drawing pictures on the snow or upon the sand when they tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
These youngsters will come together and sit down on the night on the snow and smooth the snow out with a little ivory knife, and they'll depict an entire story on the snow or in the mud. And they'll spend sometimes 2 to 3 hours. And when one finishes, then the other will take up.
Do they talk while they tell the stories, or do they just...
talk, and then they'll talk, and they'll draw the picture on the sand,
mm-hmm.
and they'll say, here, this man is doing this, and so on. But the whole story is illustrated on the snow or on the sand.
Mm-hmm. That sounds wonderful. Do they do any skin work at all? They don't draw pictures on the skins or that
no,
type of thing?
No, they most of their time is down there. Why, we have very little time for doing anything else but keeping the home fires burning. The women are employed in taking care of their children, and the men are either fishing or hunting or whaling. And incidentally, also down there, we have the beluga. And sometimes the men have bagged 30 in one hunting trip, 30 belugas, drove them all up and on the in the shallow waters and bagged them all.
Oh, that calls for a celebration.
Also, the women, and even little girls and boys and girls, are remarkably good butchers. It's surprising how they can handle a knife and cut up on those big animals, or those big fish, and without losing anything. It's a perfect butchering job.
Mm-hmm. Do they use the ivory knives that you mentioned?
They use these
mm-hmm.
the curved knives for that,
mm-hmm.
and the knives are very sharp. And within an hour, why, one of those big belugas will be all cut up and tucked away.
Mm-hmm. Well, Father O'Connor, we could just go on again for hours and hours, and we certainly hate to cut short our interview this morning, but our time is running out, and we certainly hope that if you come back to Fairbanks again, you'll have some more wonderful stories about life on Hooper Bay, and thank you so much for being with us this morning, Father O'Connor.
Thank you.